Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
I ran the numbers again for the cheapest ESG ETF portfolio. These are good numbers. They're not marijuana good, but they're pretty good. If you believe that it's going to save you in the apocalypse, you might want to consider something else.
Laura, so as I mentioned, we're going to get into ESG ETF flows. I also want to ask you about a couple of pieces you recently wrote on ESG bond ETFs. But I do have to first get your reaction to my highly scientific Twitter poll. Does it surprise you that 50% see no reason for ESG investing? You know, they basically think ESG is an outright marketing gimmick.
I don't mean to pop a needle in the balloon here, but I think it says more about the skepticism of FinTwit and the people who are extremely online than it says anything about particular trends in ESG investing, because the fact of the matter is ESG investing is already enormous in the mutual fund space, where by some estimates it accounts for one out of every $4 invested worldwide. And it's gaining popularity in the ETF space. We've had a number of ESG ETFs debut this year. So far this year, the whole space has taken in almost $8 billion, which is more than they took in last year. And out of the 90 socially responsible ETFs out there, only 20% of them are actually negative for the year. Most of, in terms of flows, I should say, negative in terms of flows for the year. All the others are up. So there is interest. There is a growing interest. Back to the points that you made earlier about, you know, the best and the worst reasons for investing, I have to kind of weigh in my own thoughts on
Please.
That. The best reason, I think, for investing in ESG ETFs is if you are already inclined to be an impact investor, an ESG investor, ETFs take out the hard work for you. They take on the valuation of stocks according to ESG criteria. They do the hard work of building and constructing a portfolio and doing all the rebalancing and the trading and stuff. They just make it so much easier. It's the same reason anybody would use any ETF, right? And the worst reason to invest in them, in my opinion, is if you're not inclined to be an impact investor and you are only investing in these because you think you're going to ride some sort of hot, popular marijuana-esque trend and, you know, find the next fund that's going to hit it big, I think that's not going to happen. And it's probably, you know, maybe kind of in the same category as the people. You can count me in the same category as the people who say that generating outperformance is probably not the best reason to invest in ESG ETFs, because now I think maybe I'm not quite as skeptical about that as maybe the people who are answering your poll, but you know, I do think thinking about ESG ETFs as the next big hot trend, it's not the reason to invest.
Laura, I know you and I have gone back and forth on ESG many times, and we could probably debate this for, I don't know, an hour or longer. But I think in a nutshell, the argument from non-believers is it just doesn't move the needle, right? Not owning a small fraction of shares in your IRA or whatever isn't going to change corporate behavior. And not only that, to your point on underperformance, I think you are risking underperformance because you're limiting the investment universe and you could deviate from the indexes. Now, you could also have outperformance because of that, but certainly underperformance is a risk. And so I think it boils down to why not just boycott companies who you disagree with, right? Don't buy their products or services, or maybe better, donate money to actionable causes to help whatever you believe in. I think overall, that's the negative side of the argument. You mentioned one positive in terms of, you know, ETFs have taken the hard work out of being able to get exposure to ESG. But you know, from your perspective, what's the bigger picture positive side of ESG?
Okay, there's a whole lot that I have to unpack in what you just said. So first, let me kind of take it step by step. So you mentioned that a lot of people think that not owning shares of a company isn't really going to move the needle, and that's fair, but it's also a misinterpretation of what ESG investing is all about for the majority of investors who engage in it, right? So sure, Vanguard or BlackRock has maybe the clout to force companies to behave in one way or another, but you and me, we don't, right? So ESG investing to the retail investor, to the small advisor who maybe has 50 or 100 million in assets, for them, ESG isn't trying to change the world. No more than deciding not to purchase goods from Walmart is about you single-handedly trying to change Walmart's labor practices, right? It's about withholding your financial support from companies that are doing things that you don't agree with and redirecting your capital towards companies that you do support. So you personally can sleep sounder at night. And, you know, if enough people do the same, maybe it changes corporate behavior, maybe it doesn't, but at least you personally can rest easy knowing that you aren't funding those labor abuses or private prisons or whatever, you know, is your cause du jour. So, and I would point out that as investors, as consumers, we tend to make these sorts of value judgments all the time in almost every purchase that we make. So why is it suddenly a bad thing when it's applied to, you know, an attempt to apply capitalism in an ethical way, you know? To the point about sacrificing returns, you know, I think that that assertion is also a misunderstanding because most ESG ETFs out there, they're not smart beta products, right? They're not promising alpha over and above what you could get through just a broad market ETF. Most ESG products are built explicitly to replicate market returns as closely as possible, just without any of the securities that folks are going to find objectionable. So, you know, you aren't going to see great outperformance. You might not see any outperformance whatsoever. You know, even with that in mind, however, I ran the numbers, and of the 70 equity ETFs with track records, at least to the first of the year, roughly half of them outperformed or were at least within 1% of SPY. And, you know, the ones that weren't tended to be the narrower thematic funds, and that could be true of any thematic fund, whether it's ESG or not. You go out to 3 years, your available pool of ETFs shrinks considerably, right? But it's the same ratio, right? About half, again, of equity ETFs keep up with or beat SPY. So smart beta ETFs would kind of kill for that sort of performance. Yet you don't hear anybody going on and on about the existential problem of, you know, investing in smart beta ETFs.
Yeah, and I think the issue, though, is that you do have the risk of underperformance. And this is just one data point. You gave data for whatever, 70 ETFs. But I saw Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas point this out last week. He noted that the iShares MSCI USA ESG Select Social Index Fund or index, which is behind SUSA, which maybe we can talk about a little bit later. But that's trailing the S&P 500 by 35% over the past 10 years. And he mentioned how a primary reason for that is because it doesn't own Amazon, which has obviously been a key contributor to the S&P's performance. So, you know, I think when you hear the talk around performance, I think for me, it's just that you do have that potential risk of underperformance. But, you know, going back to your point on, you know, whether owning a few shares in a retirement account makes a big difference, or I guess that was my point in your rebuttal. It's my belief that that's not really going to move the cost of capital for these companies, right? I mean, these shares are trading on the secondary market. Companies have already raised capital. And so you swapping shares or not owning shares with another investor is not going to move the needle there. You know, maybe on the bond side, that could be a little bit different, but no, go ahead.
I understand what you're saying, and you're right, but that's not why people are doing it. People aren't doing it so that they can change companies. They're doing it so that they personally can sleep better at night knowing that their money isn't going to support something that they don't like.
Right. It's that express personal beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. So let me ask you this. So on that note, do you think an ESG investor who, let's say their ESG ETF doesn't own Walmart, your example earlier, right? Let's say Walmart doesn't pass the ETF's ESG screens for employment practices or whatever. Do you think that investor should also avoid using Walmart services just to be consistent? I just wonder if people are actually doing that in practice.
I think that if you're an impact investor who specifically selected an ESG ETF because it avoids Walmart stock, then yeah, I think you're probably not too keen on Walmart as a company, and you're probably not shopping there. But usually I think it works the other way around. I think rather than your investment choices informing your consumption choices, usually it's your consumption choices that are informing your investments, because, you know, your discretionary cash is what you deal with on a day-to-day basis, and it's much more top of mind. So, you know, if you are inclined to not shop at Walmart for ethical reasons, then you're probably going to seek out an ESG ETF that, you know, if you knew about it, right? If you know that there are these options out there, you would be more inclined to go for an ETF that doesn't have Walmart in it. Now, you made a point earlier about how investors should just, you know, wouldn't it be better to just boycott companies that you don't agree with? And I wanted to step back to that because I don't think it has to be an either or, right? You don't have to either donate to a good cause or invest in ESG. And in fact, I believe that investors who, you know, from the people that I've spoken to over the years, the advisors, the investors I've spoken to who are ESG investors, they believe strongly enough in the promise of impact investing that they have strong enough convictions, they want to be a very consistent investor. So they're probably applying those principles to other aspects of their life as much as they can. They are probably not shopping at Walmart, you know, just to be as part of a holistic, you know, if labor practices matter to them, they are probably very involved in labor charities and they're not, you know, buying things at Walmart and they want, you know, an ETF that doesn't have Walmart in it if they think that strongly about these things. So, yeah.
So I agree that there's a whole bunch of people out there who probably have that viewpoint. Because of that, do you think ETF issuers or fund companies as a whole are specifically marketing products that I know this term greenwashing gets thrown around where because they know that that investor is out there who may have an interest in this, they're rolling out these products. But when you peel back what they actually own, there are some inconsistencies there. So I know some of the ESG ETFs, for instance, will own oil companies, will own Exxon, which may be incongruent with somebody's personal beliefs on obviously ESG. So do you feel like fund companies are maybe taking advantage of this in a negative way?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not just me who thinks that, right? It's you talk to any advisor who's trying to use ESG principles in their practice, they all, almost to the person, complain about greenwashing in the ESG ETF space. And it's a problem that's just going to get worse, to be honest, because you know, the more interest there is in the space from investors, the more that fund companies are going to want to get their own slice of the pie, right? They can read the writing on the wall. They know that, you know, there's a great groundswell of interest in this, and you know, they're going to start putting out their own products, but they're not experts in ESG. And there's also the issue of what, and I hate that we have to talk about this every single time we talk about ESG, but what does ESG mean, right? Sonia Dreisler, who is somebody I interviewed for the site last month, she had a great breakdown of ESG versus impact versus SRI. ESG, when you hear the term ESG, you should think data. It's all about data. When you hear the term SRI or socially responsible investing, you should think values. This is about investing your values. And when you hear the term impact investing, impact investing is about intention. It's about what you intend to do with your capital. And I think there's a lot of muddying of the waters between those three. And we tend to use them interchangeably. And investors tend to think of them interchangeably. But they're really not. And I think maybe a lot of the issues of greenwashing, you know, quote unquote greenwashing, really come down to just not clearly defining what your product is basing its portfolio on. You know, it's not clearly defined whether this is, in investors' minds, I should say, it's not clearly communicated to the investor that this is an ESG product, a data-based product versus an intention-based product or a values-based product.
I think that's a great point, and I think that's something that has hurt the space, that there's not a term that investors can easily understand or grab onto. I think another issue is just talking about ESG data. There are so many different ESG data sources out there right now, yeah. And those data sources may have different criteria for what constitutes ESG or what, you know, what level a company's operating on a particular ESG factor. I think that's a real problem as well, just to make, you know, defining what is ESG at the data level.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree.
All right. Well, in any event, so clearly investors are interested in ESG ETFs. You alluded to this earlier, because even though the overall assets in ESG ETFs are small, we are seeing flows in the space. I guess give us an update here. What are you seeing in terms of ESG flows this year?
Right. So I think I mentioned at the top that about $8 billion has come into the space thus far. Most of that is concentrated into a number of already large equity ETFs that are promising equity or broad market-like returns, right? Like we were talking about earlier. You mentioned the iShares ESG MSCI USA Leaders ETF, which is ticker SUSA, S-U-S-A. These names, man, just tripling over these names. that one was in a kind of a race to $1 billion with the Xtrackers MSCI USA ESG Leaders Equity ETF. That's ticker USSG. Both of them have about $1.5 billion. They've seen about $1.5 billion in flows so far this year. There's a number of other iShares products and Vanguard products, actually. The two Vanguard ESG ETFs have seen some substantial flows as well. But there's really no surprise here to me that BlackRock and Vanguard ETFs would be the ones to attract the most capital. They are the two largest ESG or two largest ETF providers on the market. Of course, most of the capital is going to go their way. And it's not surprising to me either that it's the replacement, the so-called like replacement ETFs, the ones that you can use to sub out your vanilla equity exposure in the broadest swaths in the market, the U.S. equity market, that these are the ones that are going to be the biggest draws either. I don't really see any big surprises in that. So,
I saw last week in the ETF.com live chat, your colleague Dave Noddick, he said he thinks ESG will be a slow burn. So he expects assets to just sort of grind their way higher. And he thinks it's inevitable that over a 15, 20-year period, as we see boomers transfer their wealth to the next generation, he thinks more money will end up in ESG funds. Do you agree that that's how it's going to play out? Even though we've seen this, you know, really high growth rate this year, it's been off a small asset base, but just in terms of the overall growth trajectory, is that how you see it playing out, a slow burn?
Yeah, I think of it as a snowball rolling down the mountain, right? So for a good long part of that snowball's trajectory, it's going to be pretty tiny. And it's going to consistently grow and grow. But by the end, it's going to be enormous, right? And cause an avalanche. So that's sort of what we've seen thus far in the ESG ETF space. We've seen consistent year over year growth in the double digits. I think from 2017 to 2018, it was something like 30% asset growth. But like you said, the asset base was pretty tiny. So, you know, that number doesn't really sound too impressive when you're talking about only a couple billion. But it's been that way for several years. It's been consistently in the 20 to 30% growth over year for however long these funds have been around. And if it continues at that growth rate, you're going to see the avalanche sooner rather than later, you know?
What do you think could be some drivers here? Is it more education around ESG? I know you were talking about the terms earlier, which I agree is an issue. So maybe more education around that and just what ESG investing is. Or do you think it comes down to investors realizing that perhaps they can express their personal beliefs through ETFs? I'm just curious what you think the longer term drivers will be to get more people into ESG ETFs.
So I think there's a couple of drivers. What you said is very apt, right? There is an education gap and there needs to be more and more advisors are talking to their investors and more investors are researching this on their own. Two other things that I think are going to be kind of a big thing is one, institutional interest, right? Worldwide, institutions are driving ESG investment in mutual fund space and in indexing and so on and so forth. And that's what you've seen in the ESG ETF space this year. The two top flows getters, SUSA, USSG, they were backed by a large Finnish pension company, you know, basically created these two custom funds just for them. You know, institutional money is going to continue to drive it. The other thing I think that might be a little overlooked is the fact that many of these funds are still fairly new. They've been launched in the last maybe year or two, but that's not long enough in terms of track record to get on many platforms for advisors, investors. So once those track records get long enough, once the asset bases get long enough, you're going to see them show up on more platforms. And that, I think, is going to be a game changer. Once people have access to these funds, you know, more education for sure, but there's also the access problem too. So once these funds get big enough and have been around long enough to show up on some of the most popular platforms, then absolutely that's going to unlock some doors.
Well, and also if those track records look pretty good, right? To the point on performance mm-hmm. earlier, if performance isn't being sacrificed, that'll clearly help, I think, in elevating the space. Laura, we have a couple of minutes left. I do want to quickly ask you about two pieces you recently wrote on ESG bond ETFs. So I think most people tend to think of ESG stock ETFs, but there is a growing number of bond ETF options available as well, including something called green bonds. And as skeptical as maybe I come across on ESG overall, I do think this is an area where you can clearly see the potential impact. You want to explain what green bonds are?
Sure. I think this is fascinating to me. I'm really interested in these. So green bond ETFs aren't normally, they're not what you normally think of as what an ESG fixed income ETF would be, where you would take a bond index and then screen it using some exclusionary criteria, kick out all of the bad bonds and keep the good bonds, right? Green bonds, are a special kind of bond category that are designed to fund specific climate change mitigating projects. So you'll have a green bond that funds a city converting its public transit to a zero emission bus fleet, or a green bond that finances a solar farm, right? So very specific projects. And unlike most ESG investing, which is, you know, as we talked about, making sure that you're not supporting companies that you disagree with, green bond funds are very much a way to direct your capital towards projects that you support. It's very much impact investing at its purest. So there are two green bond ETFs on the market right now. There's GRNB, that's a VanEck Vectors Green Bond Fund, and BGRN, which is from iShares, that's the iShares Green Bond Fund. The VanEck one is older. It's a purer play. It uses green bonds that have been certified by a third-party nonprofit. But the iShares one is bigger and more liquid. So, you know, you can get more into the details of what's in each portfolio and weigh it for yourself. But there are two options out there, and they're very interesting.
So. No, I agree these are interesting because, again, to your point, the debt is allocated specifically towards environmentally friendly projects. So this is a case where your dollars are directly impacting a particular cause. So I think this will be an interesting space to watch. You also had a piece on how advisors are using ESG bond ETFs overall, not necessarily just green bond ETFs, but ETFs running similar screens to what we've talked about on the equity side. So these ETFs will hold, you know, the bonds of companies scoring high on environmental or social issues or whatever. I'm just curious, anything in particular stand out as you interviewed these various advisors? I feel like you had maybe four or five advisors in the piece you wrote.
Yeah, and I actually spoke to some advisors that I didn't end up making, you know, that didn't end up including in the piece. And I think one of the most consistently fascinating and surprising things to me is just how consistent and creative folks get when applying the principles of ESG investing. And I say that because they come up with some fairly remarkable applications that never would have occurred to me. I speak to advisors whose clients don't want to invest in treasuries, for example, U.S. treasuries, because they don't want to support the U.S. government's stance on, you know, endless wars or them pulling from the Paris Climate Accords. And that's, I'm sure we could have a whole discussion just on that. I speak to advisors who use muni bonds as a way to get super granular into their fixed income investing, supporting only the states, the cities, even the municipalities that or individual projects that they want to, they feel are consistent with their ESG principles. I mean, there's a whole universe out there of, say, racial justice investing, where states might put up a bond to pay for the legal defense of a police officer on trial for shooting an unarmed Black person. And there are people out there who make it their mission to identify these bonds and categorize them for investors who want to explicitly avoid investing in them. And that's just incredible to me. The amount of dedication it takes to do something like that is really just incredible. And it makes me excited to see what creative takes on ESG are still out there available for the ETF industry. It really just makes me interested and excited to see the future of this space going forward, because we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of what's possible in ESG ETFs.
Laura, you interview a ton of advisors on all sorts of different topics. Was it difficult to find advisors who were using ESG bond ETFs?
Oh, God, no. No. I was surprised, actually, because, there's only 9 bond ETFs in the ESG ETF space. And I expected to have to dig a little bit more deeply into the advisor pool. But no, people were coming out of the woodwork to say, yeah, we use the Nuveen products, we use the green bond products, we use these other products that I wouldn't even consider. In my mind, I wouldn't have considered them as ESG ETFs, like the Muni, PIMCO's Muni ETF, or Invesco has a BAB, the Invesco, it used to be the Build America Bonds ETF. It's the taxable municipal securities ETF now. I wouldn't have thought of those as green ETFs or ESG ETFs, but they made a very compelling case as for why these funds meet their ESG screens. So maybe moving forward, you'll see more conversation among ESG-minded investors, less about using specifically ESG-branded ETFs or marketed as ESG ETFs, and more about how to apply ESG principles to investment as a whole. And even if something's not marketed specifically as an ESG product, here's how it fits anyway, right? So a lot of interesting conversations going on.
Well, Laura, fantastic stuff as always this week. I really mean it. You cover this space as well as anyone anywhere. And I just find this entire ESG topic so fascinating. There's no question, and I know I say this every time, we're going to continue to have conversations about this. I think to your point and speaking to advisors, how you didn't have a hard time finding them, and you see this interest here. Clearly, there is a subset right now that has a high interest in ESG. So just going to be fascinated to watch this unfold. But really appreciate you joining us this week. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
That was ETF.com's Laura Krieger.